The mighty Mississippi runs through the heart of the United States to the Gulf of Mexico, and it has been the heart of many stories. And many of those stories have appeared over the last 30-plus years within the pages of Big River Magazine. If you have stories about the Mississippi River yourself, or you have questions about the Mississippi, you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us, talk@wpr.org. Our guest this hour is the editor and publisher of Big River Magazine, with the latest issue out now, Reggie McLeod. And Reggie, welcome back. Thanks for being here today.
Good morning, Lee. It's a pleasure to be back.
I want to start today with a little bit of what's outside the pages of Big River Magazine, and that's some changes you've made. Now, you've been around for more than 30 years, but just over a year ago, you decided to change to a not-for-profit organization. And tell us a little bit about that change and the difference it's made for your magazine, Reggie.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a lot more work than I thought it would be. It's always been tough having any kind of solid, you know, paper publication, and it's been getting a little tougher. We've had, you know, money in the bank, and we pay our bills right away and all of that, but we're running a little lean, and I'm going to start phasing, I hope to work here a few more years, just a little less, so... We became a nonprofit because a lot of publications are becoming nonprofits, and it seems to be a model that's working well. And it's, of course, it's worked for public radio for a long time.
Sure.
And there's a lot of good publications that are nonprofit now. And actually, the Atlantic Magazine has been a nonprofit for over 100 years, and you know, so there are some other big newspapers in that now that are running that way. So that's what we've done, and it's worked out well. Our readers have been very generous. We just had a fundraising drive, and we're paying the employees a little better, and we're taking on some new tasks. We're going to have – we've always had occasional public meetings in river towns usually to talk about the issues and meet people. And we're going to do that more. And the big project is we want to create a searchable online database of all, you know, 33 plus years of magazines, so people can research all of that, because there's a lot of good information there that you won't find anywhere else.
That is more than a quarter of a century of the history of the Upper Mississippi River. And I just, not just the history, but also the news and the pictures and, you know, the thoughts that this river provokes. And there's no shortage of thoughts that the Mississippi River provokes, because it's big, so big. It goes on for so long. And you ever read something that you just end up putting down and then thinking about for a while? And that is, you know, the contemplation by Eddie Allen at the end of this issue of the magazine, Reggie, really did that for me. Time in the River is just about a perfect way to end the current issue of the magazine. And maybe we should begin there with, you know, the bigger picture and the, you know, what it means, this river, and having this magazine as a part of it.
Yeah. Eddie is fortunate to live in a house, and most of the houses in Trempealeau have a good view of the river, and he has an especially good view, and he spends a lot of time looking at that, keeping track of that river, I guess you should say, and looking at the Minnesota Bluffs on the other side, and he does a lot of hiking and biking in the area, and he's been there, lived there for several decades, and he's also a songwriter and a very thoughtful guy. And, you know, we'd never had columnists before except me. I do a short thing at the beginning, and I kind of see myself as the mascot for the magazine. And several people, and I've been reading Eddie's posts on Facebook for years, and some other people that worked here were too. And the idea kept coming up, and finally I said, yeah, you know, I've got to have some coffee with him, because I've known him for quite a while too. And I talked him into it, writing the column for us. And I'm really glad I did. We've gotten a lot of good feedback from it. And he's a wise man and a good writer.
Time in the River is the article, and it starts out with the thoughts about as spring moves into summer, and then as fog, the morning fog along the Mississippi and the Bluffs move on to the daylight sun. And here's the part that had me put your magazine down and then just sit for a while with what Eddie Allen has to say. A river is the very incarnation of time. It's always moving, but it never goes away. The present lies before you, but is constantly moving. The unknowable future is just upstream. The past is well on its way to the sea and fading into history, and history clings to this river as tightly as wet clothes will stick to your body if you fall into it. Still, as tightly as history clings, historical truth can be a slippery beast. Reggie!
Yeah. That's pretty good.
I am, but it's the way that this big river makes you think about time itself and our place in it and our place on this earth. And I feel like we're just so fortunate to have this here to remind us that time moves on and we do go with it.
Yes, yes, yes. And you know, the fog lifting off the river, too, is always been a beautiful thing that a lot of people don't appreciate. In the morning, sometimes you look out and you can't see across the street, you know, or let alone the river, and it slowly dissolves. And that's another expression of time, too. And looking upstream is like looking into the future, and looking downstream is like looking into the past. I mean, it's.
It is very profound, and it'll make you sit and think about it for a while, and I really do appreciate that. By the way, the website for Big River Magazine, where you can look at a preview of the current issue and subscribe yourself, is online at bigrivermagazine.com. So let's go from the final article from Eddie Allen to the cover itself of the July-August issue, Reggie, and that includes one of these three huge trolls from Clinton, Iowa. And to give you just an idea, if you haven't seen the cover yet, it is a troll made completely out of wood that is so big it is carrying its own tree.
Yeah, it's very cool. I've got to get down there and see those. A lot of people have been going down there. There's an artist who has been building these all around the world, and they got him to Clinton, and he used all recycled wood for these, and he's a Danish artist named Thomas Strambo, and you know, he gets recycled wood, and he's been working on these for a long time, and they're amazing things. They're more than 20 feet tall. And they're beautiful. They're beautiful too, and this one on the cover, it's clever because it looks like this guy is carrying a tree in a bucket, and actually the tree is a live tree that's growing out of the ground below, and it goes up his leg, because I had to figure this out when I saw this picture. It goes inside of his leg, so you don't see the tree until it comes out of the bucket he's carrying. So they're beautiful. I mean, they are art, but they're very clever and very,
There's three of these beautiful trolls in Clinton, Iowa: Helmut, Warren, and Marvin. And I imagine they all do seem to have their own personality, Reggie.
Yeah, they do. they're all individuals. Another one that we have a photo of is kind of laying, taking a nap with his head resting up against a tree in the shade. And they're very popular. And Clinton was one of those towns that grew up around milling lumber too, so it's kind of a double benefit for them, because they have a sawmill museum there to celebrate that as well. So I think the city really got behind this and is really excited. These were just completed in the spring.
So if you haven't been there yet, how did you find this great story?
Well, we have our sources. We have to cover 400 miles of the Mississippi River from the Twin Cities down to the Quad Cities. And we monitor a lot of news sources, but we also have one of our employees lives down in Bellevue, Iowa, and she grew up in Galena, and she does some work in Dubuque. So she's driving up and down the river all the time, and she kind of helps stay in touch with things like that, too. But we have readers and writers all up and down the river. Some of them have been working with the magazine since we started, you know. So we've developed a pretty good network now.
So there may be some submissions that you'd be interested in sharing with our guest, Reggie McLeod, the editor and publisher of Big River Magazine, online at bigrivermagazine.com. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And yet, there is an element of this magazine, Reggie, that is always the news. The River News is a feature that you have each and every time, and it runs down, as you mentioned, all the area around the Mississippi with the latest news briefs, including everything from peregrine falcons to bridge construction, PFAS contamination. And one of the things I found fascinating here, as it made me wonder, I had to look it up myself, hot tub cruises on the Mississippi River, Reggie.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to rent. It's a boat that you can rent up in the Twin Cities, up in Minneapolis. And get your friends in a hot tub and cruise down the river, it's a big city. The skyline is pretty interesting there, and enjoy a hot tub. So, I hope it's going for a while. I don't know how good a business plan that is, but I'd love to see it. I've got to get up there and see that thing go by and get some photos of it. But
I would have loved to have heard the pitch for that. Now, picture this. You're in a hot tub in a boat in a river. How does that sound?
Yeah.
I am intrigued. I would be curious about the hot tub in the boat in the river.
Yeah, most certainly.
What are some other news from the Mississippi in this issue that stuck out to you, Reggie?
Well, you know, I kind of like the ironic and novelty things as well as the PFAS things as well as, you know, this. I think all of us kind of have broad tastes of things that we enjoy.
It really does run the spectrum, but there are, for me, it was the Mississippi River Trail that now, thanks to in Wisconsin anywhere, is going to have some improved signage.
Yeah, that's in fact, we did the first maps for the Mississippi River Trail in all 10 states back when they were kind of figuring that out. So I'm particularly interested in that. And I remember when we were first got it done, we were trying to get signs up in all the states, and Wisconsin was kind of resistant for some reason. They wanted to make it simpler for drivers, I think, and not have a lot of signs, but these are little signs,
right?
And they're easy to identify. And so this will be really good to mark that trail. And I've biked a lot along the river, and actually there's a nonprofit down in the Quad Cities that's going to start arranging regular group bicycle trips up and down the river between there and the Twin Cities. So they picked out some really nice routes in Wisconsin, and this is going to encourage people to bike along the river. I think it's going to be great.
Right, I feel like that's the value in the signage, is that it'll give folks the opportunity, and tourism is such an important part of our economy, to travel the trail and see everything across as many as 10 states, and we've just made it that much easier here in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah, and there's so many beautiful stretches of the river, you know, that you can ride along. It's Lake Pepin, and the river road south of La Crosse is right down on the water, it'll be a great, it will encourage people to think about it and get out and do it. too. Yeah.
I think it's an invitation as much as anything.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got an article about Lake Pepin in this issue of Big River Magazine, Reggie, A Peaceful Drift on Lake Pepin, which, you know, when I read it, there has been a recent fatal tragedy on the lake just over the weekend, and it was a nice contrast and reminder to for boat safety, but at the same time, what a wonderful drift it can be and how it's worth experiencing.
Yeah, and we're still getting news on that tragedy. Three people died, and when I saw this story, it's an unusual story because he's drifting on Lake Pepin, and I thought about it, and I thought, this is probably the only stretch of the river where you could actually drift in a boat safely, but then that tragedy occurred, so I don't, I'm curious to see what happened with that, but you know, there's just a narrow channel that the towboats use, and the rest of the river, it's 2 miles wide in places. And this story is about the writer and his wife had a pontoon boat, and they'd go out there with some books and some snacks and just drift and read and enjoy the view. And if there's not much wind, it's really safe. And during the day, and I should mention this, accident happened at 10, you know, after 10 o'clock at night. During the day, you know, you could see a towboat or another boat 3 miles away. So it's not at all dangerous during the day. But yeah, it really, you know, that's one of the great things in summer sometimes is to just to kind of enjoy it passively. And as you were talking about Eddie's article, you know, just think about things. Let your mind wander and look at the bluffs and the sky and the water. I mean, I love doing that. Sometimes I don't do it enough, but it's an important part of living on the water, I think, on the river especially.
I feel like it makes me feel better. And I don't know, you know, if there is a science behind it, but I know that when I conscientiously put my phone down for an extended period of time, I feel a little less tense or a little less pressed. I feel a little more, as the article has in the title, peaceful, Reggie.
Yeah, and when you clear your mind and find that peace, sometimes some really major insights will just kind of drift into your attention, you know? And, I mean, there's value. I mean, there doesn't have to be any value than just enjoyment. But I think it's really good for your head and health and your thinking.
I wish I could remember who suggested it to me, but the advice I was given was take time to listen to the wind.
Yeah, that's good. I used to, in a real tense part of my life when I first moved close to the river, I used to take lunch and go and just sit by the river and look at it for a half hour or so around noon. And boy, it just made such a difference. And I called it river therapy.
I was just thinking that.
I had to make it into like something official sounding, you know, I suppose. But yeah, it really made a difference.
The Mississippi River as a therapist, it makes some sense, especially when you're taking a peaceful drift on Lake Pepin or just enjoying the bluffs or the shores or the sound of the wind and just listening in. There is a first and something brand new in this issue of Big River Magazine, Reggie, and that is the Big River Riddler. And it didn't take long for me to to have me stumped.
Really? Oh, good. Good.
I'm not great at these things to begin with, but it was fun to see.
We all wear a lot of hats here because we have a small staff, and Kelsey, who is the bookkeeper and takes care of subscriptions and many other things, has been trying to talk me into this for a while, and she wanted to have a crossword puzzle, and so this is our first attempt. We have some things to figure out with it. But yeah, it was fun. We've gotten good feedback from it. And a lot of most of the answers are in the stories.
Right.
And a couple of them are in ads, actually. So it's, there you go. You go back to it. Yeah, so it was kind of fun for us to put together, but the next one, Lee, is going to be even more difficult. So
oh, no.
Look out.
Come on, Reggie.
We're going to have more words in there. It's going to be a little busier, yeah.
Well, it's a lot of fun, and I feel like I knew the ones from the articles and others I was reaching for and trying to look back over what I missed, but it was also a wonderful way to review what's in this magazine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's... Yeah, it is fun, and it's exciting to do new stuff in here like that, and yeah, it makes people tune into things that maybe they glossed over when they were reading or looking through the magazine.
One of the other stories takes us all the way to where I am today, just down the road from Lake Mendota, and from taking us back as much as what. Thousands of years.
5,000 years ago, yeah.
With these dugout canoes that they've been finding in Lake Mendota.
Yeah, it's... I remember when they found the first couple there, and so they started... You know, a lot of things people don't find. Another similar article is about ospreys. They thought there was a shortage of ospreys, and when they started looking, they were a lot more than they thought. And it was same with this... These dugout canoes, they found one, a second one, and the more they looked, the more they found. And when they started dating them, the oldest one they found was 5,280 years old.
Jeez.
It was created before the Great Pyramid was built in Egypt. So, I mean, how could wood let, you know, if anyone... who has had a wooden boat is always struggling, you know, to keep it from dissolving into the water, you know. And but it's, sometimes the conditions are right. And some of the really old ones, I was told, are actually almost like taking wet cardboard out of the lake. So, I mean, they see the shape there, and, you know, they're very delicate things, but they can tell a lot. And the guy who wrote it, James Spartz, who lives in Madison, he sent me a longer article about dugout canoes all around the country that they found.
Huh.
And some of them on the lower Mississippi River carried more than 75 people. Whoa. In a dugout canoe. And that's a big...
How long would that have to be? I'm trying to fix, you know, 75 people in a row would be... Or in tandem?
No,
even.
It was 25, and it was three rows. I remember it was 8 feet across, and I think it was, I don't know, about 40 foot long, I think.
Wow.
I don't remember exactly. This is a long, you know, scholarly paper that I was reading, but I was trying to imagine that, and they had shades on them and that, and this particular one that impressed me that was 8 feet wide had two rows of paddlers, 25 paddlers on each side, and then 25 warriors in the middle that were ready to jump out of the canoe and, you know, attack the other guys. And then they had like a commander that was up in a pedestal in the back under a shade. So they're just starting to find out about these things up here. We always think about the birch bark canoe.
Sure. But that's a lot more than a canoe, though, when you're talking about the size of these. And the average size in Lake Mendota, according to the article, is about 12 to 15 feet long, the longest being 30 feet long.
Yeah, well, 30, but that's a pretty good size.
That's
boat.
More than a canoe.
Yeah, yeah.
where we started with Eddie Allen's article and the contemplation that we have history here that predates the Great Pyramids themselves and make you think about our world and our place in it really is quite profound in this magazine.
Well, in the first, and I'm kind of interested in archaeology, and, you know, we have a few writers that are, too, of course, but you know, the first people probably came to this area somewhere between 12,000 and maybe even 15,000 years ago, but probably pretty much for sure 12,000 years ago. But unless you're building things with stone, you know, a lot of this stuff you make out of wood and other materials is just is gone in a few years. It doesn't mean that you don't have a great civilization or you don't know a lot. It's just a matter of building materials, largely. So it's interesting that something like these dugout canoes would persist like that somehow, yeah.
Reggie McLeod, our guest, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine, with their new issue out now, and you can subscribe online at bigrivermagazine.com. From the ancient that predates the pyramids, we will talk about the modern and how it's being used for fishing when we continue. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News. So what's your Mississippi River story? And what would you like to see Big River Magazine cover in future issues? You can join the show at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest this hour is the editor and publisher of Big River Magazine, Reggie McLeod. And we invite you to join our conversation. And we are currently covering the latest issue of Big River Magazine out now. And you can see a preview online at bigrivermagazine.com. We always have a link for you available on our webpage at wpr.org/Lee. So we were talking about the ancient dugout canoes of Lake Mendota. Let's move to the cutting-edge technology of angling in our area, Reggie. And the question that you pose about whether or not fishing electronics make you a better angler. It is an interesting question, and it also seems to be a follow-up to your last issue from last year.
Yeah, well, this has been controversial because the electronics for fishing have become more and more precise and complicated and expensive. And I'm kind of a Luddite when it comes to fishing, so I kind of look at this a little bit, I don't know. I'm not interested in it personally, but it's interesting because, especially for tournaments, and this is what the story talks about. This is John Lyons, who knows a lot about fish and fishing, and he works for the UW-Madison now, but he worked for the DNR for a long time before that. And he fishes, and he looked at research where they analyzed this newest technology where people, it is so precise that they can look at a screen and they can identify what species of fish it is sometimes. That's the level of detail that they have with some of these. Yeah.
That's incredible. And it's forward-facing sonar or FFS?
Yeah, and they can say, okay, there's a 2-foot walleye over there to the right, about 30 feet up, and then they can cast for it. And so people have been running out and spending these outfits cost a couple $1,000, and people of course been buying them because people like to get new gear and things like that. But when they did studies, and mostly in lakes in upper Wisconsin, that John, and he's been kind of following this, he's interested in it, they found that this is probably not going to do a lot, give a big advantage to your average fisher. For the pros who are in the tournaments, it's a big deal. And a lot of it has to do with experience and the time they're going to put in learning how to use it well, and their motivation, too. We've been talking about relaxing on the river. For me, fishing is one of those pursuits where I often relax on the river. But these guys in the tournaments are really serious, and there's a lot of controversy around them because it's not good if there's a tournament in your area. It's a bad time to be out on the river in a boat because they're really aggressive.
well, they're competing, and one of the questions that is posed in this article is, could this sort of technology and future technology like it lead to overfishing in our lakes and rivers?
Yeah, and that's a concern. And for the pros, some of the tournaments have been banning it because they don't they think it's maybe going a little bit too far or a little too aggressive. And so it's still pretty controversial. And these are the first early studies. I'm sure it's going to be studied more in detail, and I'm sure it's going to continue to be controversial. But, you know, I was thinking years ago, I talked to a commercial fisherman, and he was talking about, oh, there are fewer fish in the river. And he was fishing for carp. And he told a story, he said, and he'd been fishing for decades at this point. And he said, well, I used to go out and, you know, I'd catch, you know, whatever, 2,000 pounds of carp in this area. And then I got sonar. So we're talking about the primitive sonar where you can see how deep the lake, the river bottom is. But you can also see schools of fish, you know, and you can see individual fish, but it's a lot blurrier. It doesn't have much resolution. And he said, so, you know, we catch 2 tons of fish. And then we could go out there and we could catch 4 tons of fish on a run. It was great. It really helped us, he said. But then the DNR messed up the river, and now I can only catch 1 ton of fish going out there. And I said, I won't use his name, but I said, do you think it could be because you fished it out? Because you're using the sonar, you could catch a lot more fish, and now there's fewer fish. It's just, you know, just do the math, you know. And he said, no, it was the DNR.
It couldn't have been me.
Yeah, and I shrugged, and I thought, well, come on, you know. So, yeah.
I may be Wisconsin's worst fisherman. I don't catch anything but other than catching up on time and relaxing. And it's to me, fishing is, you know, you get a license, you get a stick, you get a string, you get a hook, and you get some worms, and you drop it in and see what happens. But maybe therein lies my award for Wisconsin's worst fisherman.
Yeah.
Well, or best, maybe, consider, depending on what you want to catch.
Yeah. Well, we're kind of getting off the subject here, Lee, but I agree with you. And usually, you know, my way of fishing a lot of times is I don't catch and release much. If I'm out fishing for dinner, I catch 1 or 2 nice fish, I'm done. And then I might just cruise around a little bit. Or if I'm trout fishing, I'll put them on ice and hike around or check out some parts of the stream I haven't fished before. So for me, but, you know, we'd like to turn everything into a competition sometimes, you know. And
I won as the worst.
I won. Look, I'm the best today, you know. So we'll see. But it's I think it gets tough when you're dealing with natural resources that belong to everybody.
Yeah.
And some people have an advantage in harvesting them over others, and that gets complicated. And I think John's story, which I found really fascinating, because I like studies where you can actually see the numbers and see the absolute effect of something rather than speculating about it. It may be a waste of money for amateurs like us, Lee. And it might be banned in the tournament. So this may not have a real bright future. It's more like this serious amateurs maybe or something.
A little bit of a flash in the pan. And for me, a fresh fish in the pan would be much preferable. Just like you, Reggie. Let's go to your questions now at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. And we'll start with Mike in Winona, Minnesota. Hi, Mike.
Oh, hey. Yeah, thanks for the topic. And, yeah, I'm glad this is being talked about because for me, fishing, you know, as a kid, we didn't have any of this. And I think I somehow developed, like, some skills I didn't even know I was developing on how to find fish and getting out on the water and, like, intuitively, like, connecting that way with where the fish are at and then finding them is, to me, is a lot more fun than looking at a screen. So, anyways, thanks for...
I appreciate the perspective because you make the connection about connection and what you're connecting to. And if it's forward-facing sonar, you're connecting to the technology, a little different than your cell phone that you're trying to disconnect from. But if you're connecting to where to find the fish on your own with that sort of fish sense that you develop over time, you know, you're connecting with something completely different and perhaps much larger.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with Mike. And the previous article we had on it was by a guy who's a fishing guide, and he's written a lot for us too. But But his objection was, it's a beautiful thing to learn to read the water, to see how deep it is or what the shoreline looks like, and to be able to intuit where the fish are. And that's what I've always done. And some people are, you know, really good at it, as he is. And the pros are good at it, too. But really, you know, more screen time.
Is that something anybody needs? And
yeah, you shouldn't be looking at a screen when you're out on the river. That's how I feel.
Yeah, Mike, I very much appreciate the perspective and the call. Let's go to Mary in Stoughton next. Mary, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have a son that has special needs. He's in a wheelchair. And when he was little, we went on a great pontoon adventure. I think he was a local guy, and he knew so much about it, about the river, about the wildlife, the foliage, etc., off of Prairie du Chien. And then this last summer, we rode one of those big, I think it was kind of like a river boat, in between the bluffs around La Crosse, and it was lovely. And I'm wondering if you have any other ideas or things you could share for people with disabilities to get access to the river. Thank you.
Thank you, yeah. Mary. And yeah, that's a great question. And Reggie, what do you think?
Well, that is a good question. And there are some tour boats in different towns. There's one, and I'm not sure, you know, I don't know the details about accessibility, but I think most of them can probably make accommodations. There's one based in Marquette, Iowa, just across from Prairie du Chien, that's out regularly, and they have a happy hour cruise with the band on Fridays. So it's a big enough boat where it's comfortable. There's one in Winona. It's almost the same design of boat that does what they call eco tours, and I see him out on the river a lot. He goes up through the backwaters and around Latch Island, where there's a bunch of people living in boathouses, and goes up by the lock and dam. That's a nice cruise. So there's a number of them in different cities. I was just a week ago, I was just telling Lee before the show, I was on a water taxi in the Quad Cities. There's, they call them Channel Cats, and they're boats that make four stops in different sides of the river around the Quad Cities. And that's a nice run, too. And the way those are built, I know they can accommodate wheelchairs and that on this dock. I don't know about the other docks, but usually they can. I mean, that's something that people have been trying to do a better job with. Yeah, and there are other boats like that and cruises up and down the river, but those are some that come to mind right away for me.
Mary, I'm so glad you called, and thank you. And we're talking to Reggie McLeod, the editor and publisher of Big River Magazine, their latest issue out now. It's what we're talking about. And if you've got a Mississippi River story for us or a suggestion for a future story, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org, as Sue did, to say her maternal grandfather grew up along the Mississippi River in Cassville, Wisconsin. While researching her paternal grandfather, Sue learned he grew up along the Canadian Mississippi River. It's in Lanark, Ontario, Canada. Interestingly, Sue went to college in La Crosse and then stayed on and raised two children there. Then Sue's daughter's family moved to Minnesota, and the kids had to cross the Mississippi River every day on their way to school. Mississippi, again, seems to be at the heart of everything.
Yeah, I'm just... That's all very interesting. I'm just taking notes here. So is the river in Lanark, Ontario, named the Mississippi River? I have to look that up.
Yeah, I do not know my Ontario geography. Funny enough, we'll be talking about Canadian genealogy in the next hour. So,
yeah,
Sue, I hope you can stick around.
Well, my grandmother was born in Lanarkshire in Scotland, and I used to live by Lanark, Ontario, so I'm making all kinds of connections, Sue. But
you might have known Sue's family, even.
Yeah, and there are islands where kids would take ferry boats, yeah, to go to school, too. There's one down by Clinton, Iowa, where the trolls are, where people used, they don't do that anymore. No one lives on that island, but yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be better than a bus.
If you missed the start of the conversation, saying Clinton, Iowa, where the trolls are probably is a little bit confusing,
yeah.
But you should probably check out the latest issue of Big River Magazine. Yeah. It's where the trolls are.
Yeah.
Also want to talk about where the turtles are these days, because you've got an interesting article from Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources as they are trying to detour turtles to keep them safe just east of Bluff Siding, Wisconsin, Reggie.
Yeah, and that's fascinating. I was driving by there, actually, and I saw this wall along there that it's like those, it kind of looked to me like the erosion barriers that they put near construction projects to keep all the soil from washing away, but it was black and it was very straight, but there was a wetland on both sides of the highway, and I had seen many turtles crossing there. In fact, I had pulled over to the shoulder to help a big snapping turtle go across once, and I'm not recommending that anyone try this. I knew how to do it without losing a finger. But so I thought, wow, maybe this is a turtle barrier, because not only were a lot of turtles killed on that stretch of road, but also I'd see other people swerving to avoid turtles or carrying turtles across a road. So it was a really serious traffic hazard as well.
Sure.
So our intern, Niall, did some research and found out, yeah, it is a turtle barrier. And it's kind of it's pretty effective. And it kind of steers them. They have to, some of them have to, they'll die. And they won't lay their eggs unless they can get to the place where they were hatched, or get to a place that's really good to lay their eggs. They bury them in the sand usually. And so they didn't want to just block the turtles, but they wanted to redirect them so they could go under the bridges,
mm-hmm.
because there are two bridges in that stretch of highway. And so they can get to where they're going and get back and forth safely. And since he wrote this article, we've had several people call in different states, actually, that want to get more information because they know of places where there are a lot of turtles killed, and there are some species that are endangered now. So this is a pretty good idea, and it's not super expensive to do, and it works. So it's a little more than a foot high, this wall.
Well, turtles can't jump, so.
Oh, that's a good point.
Let's go to Kathleen in Winchester next. Hi, Kathleen. Kathleen?
Yes, I'm on the phone.
Hi, go ahead.
Oh, yes, I grew up in the Quad Cities. I'm 95. I grew up before the river was cleaned up. We swam in it and occasionally shoved the garbage out of our way.
Oof.
But now if people think it's dirty, whoa, it's very clean. Yeah, you always, no matter when it was 60 years ago or not, when you dove, you didn't know which direction you were going in.
So, oh.
Yeah, that's the river is a lot cleaner than it was.
And that's a good thing, but there are a number of stories about ongoing concerns about the cleanliness of the river as part of the river news section in Big River Magazine, Reggie.
Yeah, it's just different things. It used to be more conspicuous things, but now we have things like PCBs and PFAS is the big problem now, and it's one of those things that everywhere they look for it, they find it, and a lot of it's in the river, and a lot of it is because 3M manufactured a good deal of the PFAS that has been manufactured, and one of their largest, maybe their largest facilities, they have a couple of big ones up in the Twin Cities, they have one in Prairie du Chien, they have another one down in Iowa across from Clinton, and I don't know if they all manufacture PFAS, but it's been a terrible problem up in the Twin Cities. It's in the groundwater, and it was first discovered in the river by a scientist who worked for 3M, and she found it in fish. She was analyzing fish downriver of their plant, and they found a lot of PFAS in the fish, and people were fishing and eating the fish out of that stretch of the river. And when she brought it to her superiors, they told her not to publish, and she published anyway, and she basically got fired, not officially, but she was soon out of a job. And that's where it all started. That's where they first, you know, kind of engaged with it and started looking for it and trying to figure out what the dangers were. And there, it is bad. It's bad for you.
Kathleen, I very much appreciate the perspective, and the work is not done. But let's end on an up note, Reggie, and take us to some of the natural concert venues featured in this issue of Big River Magazine. A couple of them can be found in Wisconsin in the Driftless region, and they really are sort of hidden treasures.
Yeah, this is kind of fun. Parker Forsell, who wrote this story, just started working here at the beginning of the year, and he has a background in natural resources and so on, and agriculture, but he's done a lot of managing bands and arranging music festivals and so on, and he came to me with this idea, and it's pretty cool. There are these real kind of out-of-the-way places where you can go and hear national acts perform. They might not make as much money, but they like playing in a place like that. And then the environment, being out, you know, in the woods or by streams, and you know, that's part of the show, is having people enjoy the space and the area. And so, yeah, it's a very cool story, and it's a very cool idea.
There are yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say one of the places is just south of La Crosse a little bit.
Comfortably Lost?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great name for a location that's not easy to find.
Yeah, and there's another one in that area too. Which I'm never sure how to pronounce that.
Andre
Art House.
Yeah, near Ferryville.
Too. Yeah, yeah, and that's Ferryville is a beautiful little river town. So you can enjoy the ride, you can enjoy a hike, and these places are kid friendly, you know, so it's a good family adventure to have, and some of them invite you to bring a picnic, and you know, some of them have some food available, and it's really a cool idea.
Yeah, it gives you the opportunity to camp nearby. It gives you the opportunity to listen to some live music from national acts. I saw Charlie Parr listed in the article, so it would be, and it's kind of, you know, I think of how big Blue Ox Music Festival has become so fast in Wisconsin. It's become sort of a landmark and a destination, but there are other out-of-the-way places that are a little smaller and a little more cozy that you will still find among the Mississippi and the Driftless, where you will find live music amid the trees and listening to more than just the wind.
Yeah, and it's a treat for the bands too. That's why they can get them to come out there.
Exactly.
It's a little vacation for them too, rather than staying in some, you know, funky hotel and, you know, on an expressway or something.
It's like you've met a few of these musicians. You know what that lifestyle is like.
Yeah, well, I've done a bit of that myself back in the day. So, this would be great. This is, you know, I never played in a place like that. That'd be cool.
Well, and if you've never heard of them before and are interested in more, you will find it in the current issue of Big River Magazine, and you can get a preview of that online at BigRiverMagazine.com. And the editor and publisher, Reggie McLeod, it is always a pleasure and enjoyable and thought-provoking, and, you know, it just reminds us how special we have it here. So I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Lee. I always enjoy it. It really gets me thinking of the new story ideas too, especially some of the callers. Yeah.
Yeah. Looking forward to the next issue, and we will catch up then. Reggie McLeod from Big River Magazine. And I want to take a moment to say that I believe we will be making a special live appearance at the Wisconsin State Fair coming up Monday, August 10th. It is my first out there live show from 11 to 1 at the Grand Champion Hall at the Wisconsin State Fair. I hope to see you there. If you can make it, please come. You can find out more details. I'm a little bit nervous about this at WPR.org/events, but we had a big meeting about it yesterday. There's a lot of people on board. It promises to be a ton of fun and a day at the State Fair. Here's the excuse. Join us Monday, August 10th, if you can, and find out more at WPR.org/events. Also should mention Big River Magazine is one of WPR's many sponsors. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to WPR News.